Now, it's only relatively recently that rape has been recognised as a weapon of war, a fact which has inspired a new website called womenundersiegeproject.com. On the line is director of the project, Lauren Wolfe. Good afternoon, Lauren.
Well, hello, Sean. How are you?
Not too bad. As I said in the introduction there, rape has only been recognised relatively recently as a weapon of war. Has it always been used, though, as a weapon of war?
From what we can tell, it's been used, you know, for decades, centuries, but some early peoples really didn't use war as a weapon. Native Americans, we know in certain conflicts, were not using it. So no, I don't think it's intrinsic to humanity or to conflict.
So, perhaps, because one gets the sense, and maybe only because it's talked about more, that it seems to be a more 20th and 21st century phenomenon.
I think that's probably where we have more recording of it. We've heard more stories of it. You can go back to Greek and Roman times or to Kublai Khan and, you know, the Genghis Khan, and they were raping and looting, as you always hear that expression.
Mm. Because you do read about conflicts where the rape seems to be a deliberate policy rather than... That's true.
And, mm-hmm. One of the things we're looking at is when states are sponsoring rape, you know, as they seem to be in Burma right now. You hear soldiers are telling women as they're raping them, we've been ordered to do this as a weapon of war. They're literally saying that.
Yeah, so a deliberate policy to kind of spread more than a degree of terror, quite a lot of terror. So what happens at womenundersiegeproject.com? What exactly is that and what are you aiming to do?
Sure, we're actually .org for anyone
Sorry,
who's looking
excuse
for
me.
It. That's all right. And what we're aiming to do is really bring this subject into the light so that people really know that women are prime targets of war at this point. You know, I think at the turn of the last century, it was something like 5% of casualties were civilians, mostly women and children. Now it's more like 85%. And women are really suffering rape in silence. You know, soldiers come through, police come through, military, they rape women. Women then can't speak about it because sometimes their husbands will leave them. Say, in Darfur, they're made to go out and build their own hut and live by themselves. So this isn't something that women can actually speak about, and it's really tearing apart their lives.
And so on the website, this is accounts mm-hmm. from survivors of rape.
It is. It's accounts from survivors. It's also accounts from journalists who have covered rape in war, and also people like Lara Logan, the U.S. Correspondent who herself was sexually assaulted in Egypt. She gives a really beautiful first-person account of what happened to her. So it's that, but it's also analyses of how rape is specifically used as a tool of war. We're really hoping that the media can use this as a tool and that any person who's looking for more information on this can come to the site, read first-person stories, understand a little more from our analyses, and hopefully use that for their work and in their lives thinking about this.
So would there be specific sets of circumstances where a general or a political leader of some sort will say, yes, we will use rape?
Actually, in Guatemala right now, you know, I don't know if you heard, but a couple of weeks ago, a former president from 1983, I think was when he finished his term, he was just arrested for war crimes. And part of that charge is rape as a war crime. And there are some documents floating around that show that he may have, we're not really sure, but he may have ordered it as a use, as a weapon. It's a very effective weapon. It's a silent weapon. It's a free weapon. So it is true that generals, presidents, and whoever have ordered this as use in a war, in addition to bombs and guns. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But would that tend to be more likely in a society where the position of women is not great anyway, in the first instance, where women are seen to be more dispensable?
Mm-hmm. We are finding a correlation between gender inequality and rape as a weapon of war. You know, in countries where there's no respect in the home for women, there's often less respect, you know, overall in conflict.
Is it used as a weapon against men as well?
It is. It certainly is. You know, the numbers are a lot lower. But you hear about in Uganda, even men are raped at remarkable levels. It's also a very effective weapon in prisons. In Egypt and in Iran, men are raped at a very high level. So are women. It's a lesser percentage, and the fallout from that is absolutely horrible. You know, there's no comparing, really, but it's just the fact that it happens at all is a terrible thing.
Well, indeed, it is a terrible thing. And this is, I'm, by asking this question, this is by no means excusing it. But given that atrocities inevitably take place during conflicts, so will rape.
I would like to think that's not true. You know, Gloria Steinem, the feminist and journalist, she's the founder of the Women's Media Center, where this project is based, and she's the founder of this project. And her way of thinking is that, you know, it used to be commonplace to say, to use violence in the home against children. You know, we no longer beat children up every time we're angry at them. So there are things that can change. Rape doesn't have to be used in this way.
But could you put mechanisms in place where, you know, if two sets, two forces are bent on killing each other or killing civilians, how can you make them draw that line that they won't use rape?
I think it starts with learning respect for women at a fundamental level, like we were saying, in societies. There's also things that can be done prevention-wise. You know, if women are being raped, as they leave the refugee camp, say, you know, while they're fleeing war, if they're being raped because they're trying to grow a little extra food outside the camp to feed their families, and they're being raped as they go back and forth, which is the case actually in Sudan, then perhaps the international community can focus on providing more food aid. There are things we can do to prevent it, stop it, in addition to cultural changes that need to be made.
And would there be particular countries or particular parts of the world which are particularly bad?
Right now, of course, we have Congo, which is considered the rape capital of the world. About 400,000 women are estimated to be raped there every year. That's four women every 5 minutes. And this was quite a good study that came out in May. It's worth taking a look at. Women are vulnerable in places where there's a lack of a rule of law, so they have nowhere to go to actually report the crimes, and often it's the police who are raping them in the first place. So in places where there's real poverty and a breakdown in legal systems.
And in a country such as Congo, it must be very hard for the international community to intercede and try and control that at all.
It is, and we've even, you know, of course, heard stories of peacekeepers coming in and actually carrying out sexualized violence from their end. I mean, it's just such a broken society at this point. You know, there's really no telling how it will end. You know, but also we've documented rape used in the end of Gaddafi's Libya and also in Egypt right now to silence the media, in fact, you know, which is becoming a more and more widespread phenomenon.
And does your website look at the men who carry out these crimes and what the psychology of that is? Because, rather than think that certain parts of the world are full of monstrous rapists, there must be some sort of psychology at work, some sort of groupthink, or their normal, the normal things that would limit a person are somehow taken off for some reason.
Absolutely. You know, one of Gloria Steinem's ways of thinking about this that I've really learn to take in is I think men do not carry out such crimes, obviously, in everyday life. And there's, you know, the majority of men would never carry out such crimes anywhere in any situation. But there are some who, given a warlike situation, you know, it's not just peer pressure that kicks in, but their superiors are often threatening to kill them if they don't rape. You know, we've heard stories where obviously drugs are used in places like Congo where men are put in sort of an altered state. And then there's a warlike atmosphere and a kind of angry community feeling that takes over as they're rampaging through a village, and it becomes a very a need to kind of express dominance. You know, these soldiers are so poor and so disrespected that sometimes they're so angry that they're taking this out on the most vulnerable people in their communities, which are the women.
So it's kind of vulnerable, dispossessed people inflicting violence on people who are even more vulnerable and more dispossessed.
Absolutely. I think that if you look at war around the world, isn't that really how it works?
Yeah.
You see people who don't have much beating up on the smaller people who have less. I agree.
Lauren, thank you very much for speaking with us today. The name of that website is womenundersiegeproject.org. That was Lauren Wolf there. We're going to take a break after that. Random acts of kindness.